Hi, everyone, and welcome to Write About Now. I'm your host, Jonathan Small of Writing Partner Consulting. It is a pleasure to have you here with me today. My very special guest is the multi-talented Tempani Deckert. Now, those of you Aussies listening to this show may know Tempani well from her starring role for 3 years on the hit show Home and Away. Others might recognize her name as an author of acclaimed young adult novels. But to me, she's the creative genius behind the amazing course that she teaches at UCLA, How to Write a Novel in 10 Weeks.
Now.
Tell me about how you came up with the idea of how to write a novel in 10 weeks.
When I was a kid, I used to be an actor. And I loved writing. I really wanted to be a writer. In fact, I'd submitted ideas to publishing houses as a kid and tried to become a writer at like 12, and nothing had really panned out. And I was a successful actor in Australia, and I had the opportunity to do a lot of audio.
What did you do in Australia for those of us, the uninitiated?
Okay. So I was on a soap opera, a nighttime soap opera called Home and Away, which pretty much any Australian actor you know has been on. It's like the two major shows in Australia, and it's a rite of passage for an actor, really.
Right.
And it's on every night. So everyone watches has their dinner while they're watching it. So you become really, really famous really quick.
And how old were you when you were on that?
I was 16 when I was on it.
Okay. So that must have been interesting to be a teen
during
that.
Yeah. And I was on it for 3 years, playing a really colorful character, very different to myself. So it was a challenge in a lot of ways as a teenager. So I'd finished the show and I'd gone to New York and I studied acting at the HB studio. And one of the courses I took was playwriting. And I loved the playwriting so much. And it just brought back all my dreams of becoming a writer and a novelist. And so when I came back, I started writing plays back to Australia. And I was doing these audiobooks for Scholastic as an actor. And one of the heads of Scholastic said to me, I noticed you won this playwriting competition this weekend. I saw it in the paper. And he said, I didn't know you wrote. And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, we're looking for a new teen book series for girls. Do you have anything like that? And I said, oh, yeah, I do. And so I said, I'll send it to you. So I go home and I start writing the book. I'm like, okay, I better write something.
But you didn't have any.
I didn't have anything, nothing. So I had to teach myself how to write a book. And I wrote to him and said, oh, my computer's blown up. I can't get the file out. It's going to take me a few weeks to get it to you. And really, that was just buying me time to write the book. So, you know, I think I wrote it in less than 10 weeks. And then as I started traveling around, doing motivational speaking for kids about acting and following your dreams and becoming a writer. And the main question that would come up all the time by the teaching department, usually of schools I was traveling around to, was how do you write a book? I really want to write a book. I've always wanted to write a book. And it just got me thinking, well, I know how to do it.
But you had no training. You taught yourself.
Yeah, I just taught myself. So I was like, well, and I had a little system in place as to what I did. And I was like, well, I taught myself how to do it. So I'm sure I can teach someone else how to do it. So I put together a little class with a few of my friends and we experimented with it. And it was just this huge success. And what I noticed is I could pretty much get anyone to write a novel. And depending on their writing ability naturally, it changed the way the book was, of course. But I could get them through the main thing that most people seem to have trouble with, and that is completing it. And so that was this wonderful realization I had. I was like, oh, I can actually get people through this. And then it just snowballed from there and it got better and better and better. And
why 10 weeks? Like why that short a period of time?
I don't know. I guess when I came up with the lesson plan, I could see what needed to be worked on and for how much time reasonably. Like, you know, in a perfect world, I would like it to probably be 15 weeks mm-hmm. where we spend about 3 to 4 weeks editing because I think editing is actually where you do a lot of the writing. The 10 weeks is a good enough time really as a psychological thing. It's like when you buy something for $9.99, you feel like it's more of a bargain than $10.
Yep.
You know, so when a student sees, oh, it's only 10 weeks, I can tackle this. 10 weeks is doable. Whereas if you say to someone, write a novel in 6 months, most people will be like, oh, I can't do that. But 10 weeks, anyone's got 10 weeks. You know what I mean? Like it's taking Tai Chi classes for 10 weeks. You know, you can do it.
So it motivates people to actually do it because they know it's not, it's only a 10 week investment of their
time.
And it isn't actually 10 weeks, right? Tell me about that. Right. It's actually.
So really, and I don't tell the students this till they get in the class.
So don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Don't, hopefully no one's listening. Basically they spend 5 weeks setting up the book and figuring out what their book's going to be about, structuring it, figuring out the outline of the plot. And then they write it in 4 weeks and then they have 1 week of editing. So it's a crazy class. And, you know, if you told anyone to do that, they'd be like, that's impossible, but they all do it. And I've now got much, much better at figuring out how people don't do it. So now I know when there's a problem and when they're going to try and sabotage themselves, and I get them off it very quickly.
What are some of the biggest sabotage?
Definitely research, overthinking the manuscript or overthinking what it needs to be and coming up with excuses as to why they need to finish the whole thing at another time. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you know, I can't fully finish it right now because I need to research this whole thing about gorillas. And it's like, actually, you can get away with writing a book without a lot of research. You know, do the research after you've got the bones, you know, just get to the end of the plot. So it's usually research and then second guessing yourself. I'd say that's the main thing. So what happens is you'll make a choice in your book and then you'll be like, oh, I really think maybe I should be going this direction. I'll start again.
Yeah. And then you never do.
Well, then what happens is you end up starting again and again and again and again because you get a million new ideas as you go through and you just never finish. I hate to use a Trump quote, but I think it is a Trump quote. It's better to make a decision than no decision.
Yep.
So just stick to something, do that badly throughout the whole draft. And then once you have the draft, go back in and fix it. At least you're going to finish, you know, otherwise you will definitely be in no man's land forever. And that's what happens with most writers. They get through 50 pages or half the book and they just never finish it.
And you mentioned research. So as far as research goes, that's just people saying like, well, I need to really know a ton about this before I even start writing, rather than just starting to write with what they know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can't write this until I understand how elderly, you know, Iranian women make their dinner. You know what I mean? It's like, actually, you can just make that up.
Yeah.
Just make it up and then figure it out later.
Yeah, that is such an obstacle. I found myself facing that one too. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't know enough about 18th century.
Right. And also,
literature.
And then just researching is fun in it of itself. Like, you know, you can sit there for hours Googling into a dark hole of like about something and it's, you don't even realize you've been doing it for like an hour, you know? So you have to sort of stop yourself and go, let's just write the story.
Okay. So I am a student and I'm sitting in my first day of your class. Write a novel in 10 weeks. What are some of the exercises we do just to jumpstart the class?
Okay. So we always start with what I call writing out the trash, but really it's, if you've ever done The Artist's Way, it's Julia Cameron's Morning Pages.
Right. The book Artist's Way by Julia Cameron.
Which is a
great book.
Great book. I highly recommend everyone take that course. So basically it's just writing with a pen and a pad. Just anything that's in your brain. It's not supposed to be literary. It's not supposed to be something that's read out. It's just supposed to be you writing quickly and just getting whatever's in your head out. And it does a couple of things. A, it starts getting used to you writing again. It is a muscle and, you know, you want to really be flexing that muscle. So you just want to get into the whole stretching of it again. And two, I think it gets out a lot of annoying stuff that's in your head that you're worried about in that present moment, like, oh, I've got to go pick up my kid and I need to get groceries and, oh, you know, my mortgage is coming due or whatever. You can just write all that stuff out and just let it be.
It's a meditation.
It's meditation. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think it's really important. Just like
no judging. You're just writing.
Yeah, no judging. No one's going to read it, you know. And I think I have some students who do morning pages and try and make it like good writing. And I'm like, don't do that. Just write about how much you hate the woman next door because her dog barks every morning. You know, like just write just the purest thought that's coming out of you.
And how long do you have them writing out the trash?
Well, in class, we do it for 2 minutes. It's not very long. And then for homework, I get them to write 2 pages every morning, which is a lot more.
And you have them do that in longhand, right? Not on the computer.
Yeah.
Why longhand? Explain that to me.
I think something comes out of you a little differently when you handwrite. I think it's really important. I think it activates a part of your brain. And in fact, they've done studies where it does. It activates a different part of you that pressing keys on a computer or, you know, back in the day, a typewriter doesn't do. And so I think it's a little bit of a left brain, right brain activity. And I think mm-hmm. it's really important to engage that part of you. And just to feel like it's a tangible, tactile thing, like writing is a thing you're physically doing. Because I think sometimes on the computer, it doesn't feel physical because you're barely yeah. moving. And it just gets it into your body of just like, okay, we're writing now. I need to activate my creativity and my subconscious creative right. soul. You know,
it definitely activates a part of your brain that is dormant a lot of mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
And you have people, you suggest people do morning pages. You have them do it two different ways, right? They do it in the morning.
Yeah.
And you also try them, have them do
yeah.
it at the
We do
the
do two different weeks where we do it in the morning and the evening to just see when you're a better writer. You know, like some people write better in the evening, some people write better in the morning. And then throughout your life, that can change. You know, you might have always been a morning writer and then all of a sudden you're not.
Right. You have kids and
you're asleep by 9 o'clock. Yeah. 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 And so that's important to just figure out, you know, before you write a novel, when am I going to be at my best self to be creative?
How early do you get up to do your morning pages?
I used to get up pretty reasonably, like at 7, you know, and start work. But now that I have 2 children, I have to wait until they're at school.
Yeah, right.
Because nothing's getting done until yeah. they're out of the house. And that's the other thing, you know, you've got to change things to your environment.
I also recall that you do some mindfulness with them, like you have them just breathe a little bit yeah. and sit quietly.
Yeah, we sort of quieten down before we start writing. And also, I think that's been really beneficial. I do that a lot more now. I get them to do a lot of imagination exercises about their characters in strange situations, just to get to know their characters more, just in a dreamlike way. So there's no pressure. There's no getting it right or wrong. And just seeing, you know, how does your lead character get a tooth removed at the dentist without drugs? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, what kind of patient are they going to be? You know, and yeah. that can tell you a lot about your character that, you know, that's probably never going to be in your plot. But suddenly you know so much more about them on their fear levels and their tolerance levels. And just like, it's a good way of getting to know your characters in a very layered way with there being no pressure. And it's very easy. Like these imagination exercises, they only take a minute.
Right.
You know, and anyone can do them at any time. Like you just close your eyes and imagine your character, you know, walking down the street and getting attacked by a dog, or walking down the street and meeting Pavarotti or someone. You know what I
right.
mean? It's like, how does your character react in a myriad of ways is going to bring ideas to your novel.
So it's almost like an improv exercise, right?
Yeah.
You give them a character, a situation,
yeah.
and like a thing.
Yeah.
And then you say, go, write about it for 5 minutes.
Right,
and
right.
then they read it back to the class.
Yeah. So we do the imagination exercises and then we do writing exercises. And it's the same thing where, you know, they have a few things, a few parameters, usually a few strange objects. And then they see what happens to their imagination taking their lead characters in these places with these objects. And that usually reveals stuff too. And nearly always those things end up in their books.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Just because it's just something that inherently they want to write about?
I think what happens is when there's no pressure to write something, often you write the best stuff. And so they often find that those little exercises produce the best writing. And it's kind of, it's frustrating in a way because, you know, when you're sitting down and you're really working hard to write well, and you're actually writing worse than mm-hmm. you would if someone said, oh, just write something for a couple of minutes. You know, you're like that whole thing of like, if I give all this pressure and force into this work, it will be better. And actually the opposite's true.
Yeah.
It's like, just chill out, just take a backseat.
Yeah.
And then the work's flowing. So often those exercises produce stuff that, and it surprises them. You're not controlling it so much. You know, I think when you sit down to write a book, you're really controlling it. Like, I want it to do this and then this and then this. And if you can just let go a little bit, your creative subconscious is usually way smarter than you, way more creative, and can join the dots of your novel much more easily, I think.
Right.
If you let it, but that's the trick. And the only way to getting to that place is being more relaxed, meditating, having no pressure, all these things that as a writer, we have the complete opposite of, you
yeah.
know what I mean? Like we're tense, we're trying really hard and we're stressed,
exactly.
you know?
Yeah, it's the opposite. I know that you had talked about sort of, you know, finding your muse and then referring to your muse during the whole writing process. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like what you mean by that?
Well, you know, and there's a few people who do this, and the main people who do it are musicians. So like Beyonce does it, you know, when she goes on stage, she, I think she calls her character Sasha Fierce, right? And the only way she can perform at her best level is imagining she's actually someone else, because she's kind of a little shy and sweet, and she knows as a performer she can't be that. So she imagines she's someone else and allows herself to go to that place. Now, as a writer, I feel like when you get stuck, a great thing to do is to create a little being. You can call it whatever you want. I always have people draw a picture so they visually know what it looks like. And I usually get them to make a small little monster that's not human usually.
Why is that?
It's just more fun. You know, it's more fun. And also so it doesn't take on the personality or characteristics of someone they know.
Yeah.
You know, so it really is a whole
other
person.
Can it be a cat?
It can be a cat. Good. In fact, there's a lot of cats.
Okay.
A lot of cat monsters end up in the class. And then you, when you get stuck writing or you're tired of writing or you feel uninspired, you tell them to write for, say, 3 pages. And so you're imagining that this little creature is actually doing the writing. The creature's not in the story. This is where people get confused. Creature's not in the story. The creature is writing the story. And so it usually takes on a slightly different tone. Like the creatures are usually snarkier or funnier or drier, or it could be, it's usually the opposite of your personality.
Yeah.
And so the tone will change a little bit, but then you can just go back and edit it later on. But it's a great way of exploring your book differently. And also when you get stuck, having a device to get unstuck.
Yeah. And giving you confidence, because now it's not you necessarily writing it. It's
You can blame that thing. You know, it's like, oh, that thing's making all these mistakes instead of me.
I blame Sasha Fierce.
Yeah, exactly.
So in order to inspire people to come up with ideas for their novel, what are some exercises that you do?
The main one that we do is I get the writers to write out a character list, and I don't allow them to think about it. They have to answer, I think it's 17 questions to create a character. So we start off with that. I always think great books have great characters. You know, you can have a great plot, but if you don't have a great character, it's just you don't connect.
Yep.
And I think that's integral. So they answer these 17 questions. And
what are some of the questions?
Name, age, appearance,
basic stuff.
Family, education, work, all the basic things you'd probably put on a dating site, I'm sure. But then we get into a few interesting things like what would the character die for?
Oh, that's good.
Or what is a secret that they've never told anyone? And, you know, if you think about it as yourself, you probably have a secret you've never told anyone.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. That alone tells you everything about a person. Why wouldn't they tell anyone that? Why are they ashamed about that? Why are they keeping it a secret? How did that shape them as a person, and what age did it happen to them? You know, so stuff like that's really important, and they don't have time to really think about it, so they just say things on the fly. And then it starts to create, basically, I think my class snowballs. Mm-hmm. So you start off with one idea and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're just letting your imagination flow. And before you know it, well, I also think your creative self, the subconscious, does know what it wants to write. Does know the story it's going to write. You don't know it. You have to connect with it, and then it comes out of you. So by doing these funny little arbitrary exercises, even though you think you're coming up with these answers off the top of your head, I think they're deeply ingrained in you as a person wanting to bring these characters and these stories out. But it's a great way of having no pressure and thinking it's just coming out of you randomly. But I don't think it really is, because usually by the end of the class, I'll ask everyone, how does this story, this fictitious story, relate to some aspect of your life? And 9 times out of 10, every single student will realize it has something to do with them. I have a couple of good examples of that. One guy who is a fantastic screenwriter, a sci-fi screenwriter, took my class, and he was writing this book. I don't want to ruin his plot, but basically it was about monsters on a spaceship and stuff. And he said, oh, I know what this is, how it relates to my life. And he goes, I had no idea. He goes, it's about me being jealous of my wife and my son having a closer relationship than I have with them. I'm like the odd man out. And that's what was happening on the spaceship. you know, and it was like
wow, it's therapy. That's
it's totally therapy. Yeah. Like usually after my class, people get a divorce, they change careers, they go traveling around the world because they realize something about themselves that they've been hiding, essentially.
I think you once told me that people also like end up having, you know, getting married or having like romances that they never had.
Yeah, or deciding to have a baby or like big life changes, stuff that they've been hesitant on. And I think there's something about writing a book that heals something within you or acknowledges something within you that you've been avoiding.
So are you doing those character sketches of the protagonist, antagonist? Do you, or is it your first you do it for your main character?
Yes. Yeah.
And then do you keep doing it or did you sort of within that?
Within the class, I just get them to do it for the main character. And then their homework is to do it for all the other characters. But, you know, how often are they doing it? Probably not. You know, students are bad. You know, so...
they're just bad students.
Yeah, they're just bad. If I'm not checking it, they don't do it. But I think they nearly always do the enemy character. I do have a section where they have to do another list for the enemy character. And then I say to them, you should be doing this for all your sub characters.
Yeah.
You need to know all these characters well enough so that you have juice to draw from for elements of the book. You know, your A, B, C, D and plot lines are not going to develop unless you know many layered aspects of your characters.
So how does the fleshing out of the characters lead to the idea for the actual book, the story of the book?
Okay. So let's say you discover that your lead character really likes making cupcakes, right? And you didn't realize that. That's something you just made up. And they also have a fascination with watching surgeries online, okay? So suddenly that plants a seed in your subconscious, creative mind. And then when we start writing little exercises, maybe that comes out. You know, I've told you that your character walking through a city street and they come across a abandoned dog and a shopping cart. And then because we put in that character list that they like cupcakes and surgeries, maybe they happen to stop at the cupcake store that's across from the hospital just by chance and then decide to take the cupcakes into the hospital to give it to one of the surgeons and ask if they can watch a surgery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's been planted and it often comes back into the little stories.
Right.
And then the writers get to play with these little stories and experiment with them and see if that's something that actually works or doesn't work. And then that may be an instigator to, okay, what is my plot? What is the biggest problem for my character for this story? And maybe it is they need a career change. They want to go from being the baker to the surgeon, you know?
Yeah.
So that then creates the storyline.
So is the next step after fleshing out the character is to write like a plot summary, a brief plot summary?
And I think this is a thing that a lot of beginning writers are very hesitant on, which is structuring your plot. I think there's a romantic view that you should sit down at your desk at 11 o'clock at night with your glass of whiskey and your houndstooth coat on and your pipe.
Your Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, and sit down and the novel just comes out of you. Well, you know what? I think that happens to maybe 1% of the population. I think it does happen.
Right.
But I think maybe it
happened once in your lifetime.
Yes. Yeah. Or you just write one book. That's right. You know, I think if you're starting out as a writer, this is a great way to understand structure, to understand how to get from A to B to C. And so we create what I call the beginning, middle, and end. So we understand the larger scheme structure. So what happens at the start of my book? What happens in the middle of my book? What happens at the end? And then we break it down to chapters. Okay, well, now what's going to happen in every chapter? And so I get them to fully structure what's going to happen. And everyone hates it. Like those 2 weeks we do that, everyone hates it. Like they're regretting the class. They want their money back.
True confession, there is nothing I dislike more about writing than outlining and planning it out.
It's so boring.
It's so boring.
And it's hard. Like it really hurts your brain because you're trying to create this world that you don't know yet. So it's very difficult. But what happens is I believe that you can have the best creative, amazing moments when you're restricted. Because you're restricted within these boundaries you've created with an outline, suddenly this creativity can just fully fly. Whereas if there's no creative boundaries, i.e. no outline, you often get writer's block or you get stuck or you start rambling and just writing innocuous passages you don't need.
Well, this is why people don't write novels in the first place, because it can be about absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Right. So then
it's
you're
too
like,
much.
It's too much. It's overwhelming. They want somebody to just tell them, you make the book about this, or, you know, or they want to feel like the book has to be about this. So, you know, you will end up in your class working on something. Like you have to make that decision, right? You have a parameter.
Yes.
Now.
I say it's better to make a decision than no decision, because a decision moves you forward. No decision leaves you just sitting there twiddling your thumbs. And also, I believe that you can't figure out how to make a great novel without having figured out how to make a bad novel. You know, you should start with writing it incorrectly so that then you can go back and realize how to make it great. But you can't often make it great without understanding how it's wrong. You know what I mean? So you need to write. And I say,
you have to fail.
We are writing a bad novel. Write your first really bad novel.
That's really a good sales pitch.
Yeah. And then everyone can do that.
Yeah.
It's like no one has a problem writing a bad book.
Yeah, this book sucks.
Yeah. But then they've got this bad first draft, which I will say, you know, over the years of teaching, I'm always so amazed at what people come out with. They're never bad.
Right.
You know, like,
well, that's because you're so positive anyway.
But it's fascinating. Yeah. It's like, you know, they all think it's terrible. And then we read them out in class and everyone's like, wow. Like everyone's fascinated. They're like, oh my God, this is so good. And while you're writing it, you feel like it's the worst piece of crap ever. But then when you read it out and you see everyone's loving it, you're like, am I deluded in what's good and bad? Because you are, you know?
How do you silence that little voice in your head that tells you when you're writing, this is the worst thing that has ever been written? Like, I'm sure you even have that voice. Oh, I get that voice
absolutely.
All the time.
Absolutely.
Like, and this is terrible.
I think what's helped me is I recognize that one day I'll think it's bad and one day I'll think it's good, the same material. And so I recognize that I'm not a consistent judge of my work and I'm not a reliable judge of my work because it changes on the day, what I think's good and bad. And I really think going back to meditation is the key, where like if you do any traditional meditation, it's like, take it easy, take it as it comes. Mm-hmm. Don't take anything personally. Just let it flow. Don't worry. Don't judge. Don't judge.
Right.
And I think you're allowed to judge when you say it's time. So once you write that first draft, then you say, okay, now I can judge it. So I can make it a good second draft. But it's hard. You know, I'm not going to say it's easy. That's the hardest part of being a writer. Like I always equate it to playing golf. It's like if you have a bad golf game, it kind of ruins your day and you feel horrible about yourself. Same with writing. If you have a bad writing day, you feel useless.
Right. And yet if you have a good one, it can be one of the most exhilarating feelings. But it's so hard to get to that moment, that high.
And it's never consistent.
It's never consistent. You never know when it's going to come or go.
Right. Next day it's awful and you're back to
square one. The best thing about writing is that you're just done with it for the day.
Yeah.
Okay, so the beginning, middle, and an end as the structure of your novel. Are there certain, you know, rules that you give as to what needs to happen in the beginning, what needs to happen in the middle, and what needs to happen at the end?
Yeah. You know, I go back to a lot of screenwriting technique, mm-hmm. which I think is really helpful because people these days, I think, are watching more film and television than they are reading books. So I think they can understand mythic structure better through those examples, which is a bit sad, but it's true.
It's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
We don't live in Dickens time.
No. So I always say start with a big problem for your character, mainly because it's more fun to write. You know, you can start off with this lovely, rambling, poetic beginning of a character and their world and everything. But you know what? It's not that interesting to write. So start with them stuck in a toilet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like start with something fun to write.
Yeah.
Okay. So start with a problem. And then the middle should be the problem has, they've been trying to solve the problem, but now the problem has got worse for different reasons. And then we're going to get to the end of whether this bigger problem has now been solved or not. And that shapes the genre of your story. You know, if the problem doesn't get solved, it's a tragedy. If it does get solved, it's probably a rom-com. You know what I mean? Like you just work within the genre. And that's always easy to do. If you ask someone to come up with a problem for a character, they can do it. And then coming up with a bigger problem is the harder bit. And often I have to push writers to really go for the jugular, which I think is really interesting. People often play small with their creativity and their nervousness about what a character should or shouldn't be doing. And they often don't want to really push them to these dramatic places.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, but I know it happens a lot. Like they'll be like, oh, and the character is struggling to get their high school degree or something. I'm like, that's not interesting. Like,
well, maybe it's because they want to make it, most people want to make it real, right? Unless they're writing fantasy fiction or something.
Right.
And they think real, there's like sort of a mundanity in being real, you know, but
probably.
Actually, you know, art elevates life. So, and they're afraid that if they make it too big, like instead of, you know, he loses his job, he gets abducted by aliens, that it becomes, it gets out of the realm of, but there's something in the middle there, right?
Yes, yes.
Maybe he loses his job, but he also, you know, loses his family. You know, maybe it's just the problem is a lot, is magnified.
Well, I always equate it to if someone tells you a story just about something that happened to someone they know or even themselves, and they go, oh, I had this terrible thing happen to me. I ran out of cleaning fluid and I couldn't clean the kitchen and it was so stressful all day. And then the kids came home. It's like, bow, bow. You know, like, oh, I really don't want to hear your stupid story about the cleaning fluid and how you've had such a bad day because you couldn't clean the floor. Like, who cares? You know, but if you tell me, oh, I had a terrible day. My neighbor dropped dead on my doorstep. Suddenly you're like, and then what happened?
Yeah. And then, you know? And then, yeah.
I think when you're starting out writing a book, go for gold, you know, like
go for it.
Overdo it. And then you can start refining it, bring it back to reality a little more if you're worried you got ridiculous. You know, it's better to extend than to not go far enough and have this kind of meandering nothing that no one wants to read. You know, like push the boundaries a little bit, mainly because it's just more fun.
Mm-hmm.
It'll inspire more ideas and then you can refine it back to being more sophisticated.
More real in your mind.
Yeah.
Okay. So once you've got the beginning, middle, and an end, you said to start writing chapter summaries. Is that kind of the next step? You write just little summaries of each chapter.
Yeah. Write little summaries, which is really hard. It's like the most challenging thing.
Summing stuff up. Yeah. That's
thing.
The outline. So that's your equivalent of sort of the outline where you're writing like what happens.
Within the parameters of that beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And I break it up with like the beginning should be chapters 1 and 2. Middles should be, you know, a bunch of chapters. And then the end should be a couple of chapters. You know, it's like... So it gives you an idea of where to aim. And
so did we take, we might have talked about this. So the beginning is the problem. Then the middle is the problem escalates and keep getting worse. And then you resolve it at the end. Right?
Well, or maybe not.
Or maybe not, but the end is a sort of.
Yes. Something has, basically the character has to have grown by the end, one way or another. So let's say their problem is they got stuck up on top of a Ferris wheel. And then the Ferris wheel starts rolling down the hill and they're clinging on for dear life is the middle. And then the end is the Ferris wheel hits a tree and they all die. But then the character goes to heaven and discovers that by being on that Ferris wheel, they saved their grandma for coming to visit them and also dying or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just making it up.
Yeah.
But the character should have grown. And if they don't grow, it's a tragedy.
Right.
And so hopefully maybe someone else grows. Like maybe their son or maybe someone else involved with them.
They change. The character definitely changes.
Yes.
Themes. How early on do you have to sort of think, what is the theme of my book?
Very early. I think that's the most helpful thing when you're writing. If you have a theme in mind, like this is a battle of the underdog story, that will shape every chapter you write and how you write it. I also think genre is super helpful. If you can commit to a genre up front and say, I'm writing comedy, you're going to write totally differently to how you write as a drama.
What about like if you're saying I'm writing young adult, which you've done a lot?
Young adult's interesting. Young adult is basically writing adult books. It's just with teen protagonists. So I kind of think the same rules apply. There's not really anything different about young adult other than the characters are younger and they're doing younger people things.
Interesting. So you shouldn't censor yourself like, oh, that's kind of R-rated if I put a curse there.
No. And I think... Back in the day, yes. Mm-hmm. Like 20 years ago, you couldn't write a lot of stuff in young adult.
Yeah, now you can write anything.
Now you should write anything because they want to feel that also it can be crossover fiction. They want to know that this young adult novel could be sold to adults so they can make enough money.
Yeah.
So from a marketing perspective, you want it to cover those bases.
But one of the things that I would imagine, and I've thought about writing young adult books, is that, you know, I'm not a young adult anymore. So I really be able to capture sort of the language that they speak now, even though I do have young kids, young adult kids, you know, is that important? Do you think like if you choose to write in a YA form?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it changes.
Yeah.
That's the hard bit. I think it's constantly evolving. Kids are constantly evolving in how they communicate. And especially now with technology, I think they're communicating really differently. And I think the way they structure sentences is really differently because they're so used to abbreviating everything.
Right, everything's sort of text or, yeah.
And I think that that is definitely, you know, a trick to get out of that is to have your character be an unusual character, like the geek or the nerd or, you know.
That's what John Green does. His, they're always like super smart.
Yeah, they sound like a 40-year-old man, you know, because, and, but it works because he says up front, he's this quirky academic nerdy guy or, you know, they're always highly intellectual.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can trick your way out of it. And then some people just naturally do it. Like I just had a student, I think she's in her 60s and she wrote about like 19-year-olds and her voice is so accurate as a 19-year-old. And she's just good at channeling a 19-year-old. And I think if you're genuinely drawn to writing tween and young adult fiction, there's a part of you that's very alive at that time of your life, and you'll probably be able to write it pretty well. If you're just writing tween and young adult fiction because you feel like it might be something interesting to do or try, you might have a lot of trouble.
And also a lot of people do it because it's really where their most deals are being made, right?
Yeah.
It's the most popular.
Yeah. But also I think it's the hardest place to get published because it's so competitive. And I think they're doing really amazing things with young adult right now. It's very sophisticated and a lot of it's been done. So, you know, it's really hard to write something.
Can't do any
different.
More dystopian, apocalyptic young adult or vampires.
Right.
Or
but they will.
They will.
Someone
keep doing,
will.
Or somebody will figure out the next new thing. Okay. So back to your class, you're choosing your genre. And I think that's very important because you just want to understand, you know, and you, can you do hybrids? Can it be a a dramedy?
Yeah, I call them slashies.
Okay.
You can have as many slashes as you want. And in fact, you know, sometimes people in my class come up with like slashies I've never heard of before. Like this is historical vampire fiction with a futuristic subplot. And you're just like, what? You know, and,
like,
and
it sounds
amazing, you know, just from your genre, you can start inspiring yourself with ideas.
Do you think you should start reading books within that genre if you hadn't already, just to kind of get yourself or does that kind of intimidate you because you start reading books that are really good in that genre and you're just like
I think it will absolutely terrify you and intimidate you, but I think it will also help you to understand where you need to be going. And I think sometimes depending on your age you can have a warped sense of what you're writing if you're not keeping up with things.
Yeah.
You know, like I wrote a kid's book a while back and my agent's like, this isn't going to work. And I was like, what do you mean? And she goes, things have progressed from here. And I was like, what do you mean?
What was the topic?
Like, oh, it was like, I thought I was writing a young adult novel. And she's like, no, this is for like 10-year-olds.
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean? And she goes, read this. And she gave me some young adult book that had just been written. And it was so sophisticated and grown up. And like mine looked ridiculous compared to it.
So it's a middle reader or whatever they call that.
Yeah, middle grade reader.
Middle grade.
But I had no idea because back in my day, that was what I was reading as young adult. You know, so I think
Beverly
you should be reading. And good writers are good readers. I think you should be reading no matter what. And you also want to be reading in your genre to make sure you're not writing something that's already been written.
Yeah.
Because that happens a lot.
A lot. It's pretty hard to come up with a completely original idea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they say there's only 7 stories in the world.
Right.
But it is helpful. It's kind of like when you're writing a screenplay, you want to start watching movies that are in that genre just so you understand. Because you can study them and sort of the way they're structured and the way they're...
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, rather than us all being this competitive society, we should just be building on everything.
Right.
You know, build on all the amazing things that have already been created and expand it out. I think there's a grand negativity going on within the artistic industries out there of like, well, I need to do this and I've got to do this. And it's like, it kills the art and the reason why your thing will be good. If you're panicking about what everyone else is doing, you know, you need to just honor it and say, oh, that was amazing. How can my thing be as amazing? You know,
after the chapter summaries, what's the next step?
So then you start writing. And I would like to say you should hold off and really master those chapter summaries.
Okay.
You know, go over them more times than you think because you will be lazy and you'll be like, yeah, that's fine for that. But if you have vague concepts in your chapter summaries, like Martha and Ben get together and have a fun time, you know, it's like that doesn't mean anything. It should be Martha and Ben go to the market, enjoy different foods in the market. They go, they catch the trolley. They then go for a surf down at the beach. They come home and they watch their favorite movie. You need to be specific about what happens in your chapter summaries.
And is there a way that each chapter should end? Like, is there a...
I think it should come to some kind of resolution for each chapter or a cliffhanger.
Okay.
Depending on your genre. You know, like if you're writing a comedy, it doesn't really matter. Anything can be happening as long as it's funny. But if you've got a thriller, you want to drop a little red herring or a seed of why you want to turn the page, you know, absolutely.
That's interesting. Okay. So yeah. Now you're writing your book.
Now you're writing.
Tell me how that works. What
okay,
are some
well,
of the-
I think you should be reading your outline for your chapter before you start writing, which funnily enough, a lot of people don't do. And then
do your morning page.
I start with a meditation just to get clear and change hats from whatever else I'm doing to being a writer. And then do your morning pages. And then I definitely think a lot of my students have started using a timer. I think this is very helpful. And say, okay, I'm going to sit down for an hour to 2 hours, depending on how much time you have. And I don't get up till I'm finished. Some people find they have to do it in 30-minute increments and give themselves a 10-minute break.
Yeah.
And then back to 30-minute increments. But you cannot get up.
Okay.
And you just have to write till you're done.
No email on.
Yeah, emails off, all that
phone
stuff.
Phone is off.
Yeah,
distractions
are off. Yeah.
And no like, oh, I have to research this before I write this. Let me just
go
on Google
no
for
research.
1 minute.
Research is procrastination.
Totally.
Yeah, you got to do that at another time. That's not your writing time.
So 2 hours, you think, is a good block of time?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you can really get a lot done in an hour. An hour goes by fast. Generally, I think 3 hours is what you need, but most people, if you're working a job, don't have 3 hours.
Yeah.
So 2 hours, I think you can maybe squeeze in.
And if you are working a job, which most people are,
mm-hmm.
do you recommend doing this in the morning, at the night?
Well, we do an experiment in my class about that, where we spend 1 week where everyone writes in the morning and 1 week where everyone writes in the night, and then they decide what actually works better. Some people creatively are better in the evening and some people creatively better in the morning. Generally, I think if you write in the morning, it's better because there's nothing to distract you, whereas when you're writing in the evening, stuff could have cropped up. Like, oh, suddenly you have to stay late at work for a project, or your kid just broke their leg and you're in the ER.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. Life takes its own form. So if you can get up early and write and get it done, A, there's a level of satisfaction and you don't have it weighing on you all day of like, I've got to get to my writing time. Because
yeah.
it becomes addictive too.
Right.
You know, you want to get to that writing time.
Oh, because I was going to say maybe if you're doing it at night, you might want to be like, ah, I'm so tired. I don't
yeah.
want to do it now. Morning, it's like you get it over with.
Yeah,
it's
get
like
it done. Yeah. And I've noticed too that if you're under 25, you generally write in the evening. And if you're over 25, you'll write
25.
In the morning.
I'm under 25.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Lucky you.
I like writing in the evening.
I certainly am not in that category.
Really?
I've like,
what time do you get up to write in the morning?
Well, now I've had to do a bit of a dance around it because I have two children, one of whom is still at home.
Uh-huh.
So I have to write in the nap.
Oh.
Which is at
you're
midday.
Like, keep it going. Keep
yeah,
it going.
Yeah. So that's been really challenging. But
yeah.
once he starts school, it will have to be I write once they both are at school. So
it's more about writing a certain amount of time than writing a certain amount of pages?
Absolutely.
You, okay, so
well,
you don't say, I should write 3 pages today.
No. Actually, that's not true. Yes, I do. I work from pages. You must write 2 to 4 pages a day. And depending on the person and depending on the book, I think you change that. So I always write at least 3 pages a day. And it can be more than that if I want. If I can do more than that. But for my class, I get them to write a minimum of 3.
Okay.
Yeah. But professionally, I usually write 4 to 8.
And then, you know, 4 to 8. Oops, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And with no judgment, no editing.
No
going
editing.
Back. It's just freehand.
Yeah. Don't edit.
And not freehand. So you can type this part.
Yes.
You don't actually have to write. That
yeah,
would,
yeah, yeah.
Then you'd be like
it.
Woody Allen or
yeah.
Shakespeare. I always like to write with like a feather pen. I think that's.
I do all my editing hand with a pen.
I do too. That's because I used to do that, you know, back in my
right.
editing career. So yeah, I'm
right.
so used to it. I can't do it.
I can't do it with a computer. It doesn't make sense to my brain.
It doesn't either.
Can't see
I
it.
Have to go back.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're writing your pages and then in your class, people are coming back and then some of them are reading what they wrote
yes.
to the class.
Which is so wonderful because usually they all think their stuff's terrible.
Yeah.
And then when they read it out to the class, they see that the class is absolutely enamored with what they just wrote.
Right.
And then they get all the positive feedback about what is working. And that's mm-hmm. so inspirational for them to then try a little bit harder for the next week.
Yeah.
And then they start getting into this lovely zone of wanting to hear the positive criticism, because who doesn't? And you'll notice the writing gets better and better and better. Yeah. And the reason it gets better and better and better is it's the muscle. They've just been working the muscle longer. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, I think a sad part about writing is it's a muscle, you know, so yeah. you just got to keep working it. And it's sad, but it's true. It's just really mundane fact, you know. It's like, so by the end of the book, they're writing really, really well.
Yeah.
And they go back and look at some of the start, which they thought was amazing.
Right.
And it's like, not. You know, yeah. They realize that really
But wait,
wasn't.
The class told me this was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
yeah.
you know, they're only allowed to tell you what's good. So you don't know any better, you know.
Right, exactly.
But then, of course, you have the wisdom and the muscles really strong. So then you can go back and edit it and make it amazing. And that's the trick.
So take me in that. Okay. So now 4 weeks has passed because really they only have 4 weeks to do the writing.
Yeah. So they write every day for at least 2 to 3 hours and they're writing 3 pages a day. And it causes a lot of problems in their lives, which is really interesting. Like partners get really annoyed, friends get annoyed, kids get annoyed.
Bosses get annoyed.
Yeah. It's challenging. Yeah. It's not easy. It's certainly not easy. But there is such a thrill to it. It's like training for a marathon. And
you actually finish it.
Yeah. And then they finish it and there's such a sense of achievement. And then I start talking to them about editing, how they're going to edit it.
So talk to me a little bit about that. There's different, you had different editing passes, right? So there's an editing for story.
Right. So I go through your major edits should be edit for character, edit for plot, edit for genre.
And so what does this mean when you say edit for character, edit for plot?
So you're going to read your manuscript just looking for how you can change things. Let's say we're editing for character. You're just going to be reading your manuscript and taking notes to flesh out, develop, expand, and be more creative about your lead character. So we're just going to do it on one character, right?
Yeah.
So what this does is it focuses the mind on only one aspect of the book. So, because otherwise it's too overwhelming. You have, you know, let's say 300 pages of a novel. There's a million things you want to change and you don't even know where to start. So if you just focus on one thing and read through just looking for that one thing, you just make notes on, okay, so my lead character has a twitch and loves eating bananas and is scared of cats, right?
Yeah.
So you're going through and you're just looking for how you can add little things that honor those parameters. And you go through and you write notes. You go through and write notes just for that. And then you'll go through and do a pass for another character. So it takes a long time to do these passes.
I think the one thing about doing that might be tricky is it's as you're doing your character pass, you're also noticing, ooh, I don't like the setting or whatever pass you're doing.
And I always say to my students, don't worry, you won't forget.
Yeah, you'll come back and
do that. They'll be like, oh, I need to write notes about that. It's like, if you didn't like it this time, you won't like it the next time you read it either. Don't worry. You're not going to forget that you hated that part of the book.
Yeah.
But that is the problem. And that's why I like them to be laser focused, because otherwise you get too distracted. And you want to make sure things are consistent as you go through. So let's say as you're doing your character pass, you start developing that this character has this imaginary best friend that was never really in the first draft. You want to make sure you carry that all the way through the whole story so that it makes sense.
Yeah.
And if you're distracted by suddenly editing for setting or editing for plot or whatever, you're going to maybe forget about that and not keep it flowing through the book. So you really want to just focus on one thing at a time.
So character, plot, setting,
genre. And then
cliche. Do you do a cliche pass?
That's a good pass.
Cliches.
Yeah.
You know, that's a writer's.
I like that one.
Birdie.
I'm going to add that one. A cliche pass. I also do a flow pass, like if everything's flowing. And then, but that's usually a last pass. The genre pass is really important because let's say your genre is thriller. You want to go through and make sure it's thrilling the whole way through. You know, you don't want it just to be thrilling at the start and part of the middle, and then it kind of gets a bit mundane or turns into a drama.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it thrilling. You know, if someone spent $7.99 on your paperback copy at Barnes & Noble for a reason. You know, so you want to keep it thrilling all the way through. And same with comedy, romance. You want to, you know, you may have a scene that you've written and it's supposed to be a comedy and it's not funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to be a comedy, so find something funny about it. You know, like it doesn't have to be every line, but it should represent
a comedy. You're also making me remember that one of the excuses I hear sometimes is like, well, I don't really know how to write a mystery because, you know, mysteries, there's like rules, right, of mysteries.
Yeah.
Like the, so like with a thriller, a romantic comedy, I know in screenplays there are definitely like beats that you want to hit, and is it the same with books? Like, or like, should you go?
No, I think books you can play with a lot more.
Okay.
And I think those rules can be helpful, so I don't think you should steer away from them, but I also don't think you need to stick to them.
Right.
I think that's the great thing about novels is there are no rules. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you want, but I think you need to always make sure that the reader is engaged. That rule never goes away. If there's a point where your reader is not engaged, you need to put something in there to bring them back.
And how do you know your reader won't be engaged? Is it your gut instinct?
Because you're not engaged.
Okay.
Like, you'll read what you've written and get bored. And you're like, okay, I'm bored here. They're going to be bored too. So throw in a red herring, throw in a clown walking past.
Alien monsters on
anything.
A ship.
It doesn't really matter. Just something to wake them up.
To clarify, these passes are happening after your class, right?
No.
Oh,
well,
they're not.
This is the thing. If you're a very good student of mine, you'll be able to get maybe through two of those passes in the last week.
Yeah.
But generally, people just manage to write the book and just get to the end.
Yeah.
So they don't really have that luxury. Usually the editing for them is them just fixing things up a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, so after the class, and that's what I say, after you go away, this is now what you're going to work on. You're going to do all these editing passes. And the editing passes create your second draft. Because mm-hmm. people are like, how do I make a second draft? I've wrote the book. This is what it is. It's like, no, it's not.
This is your bad novel.
Yeah, this is the bad version of your book. You know, so by doing these editing passes, you're going to start stimulating ideas and creative impulses of how to expand things out and make it more layered. You know, the main problem people have writing it and the criticism they'll get is this is not layered enough. This is not developed enough.
What does layered enough mean?
Realistic.
Okay.
So, and realism comes in usually through sensorials and minutia of like what's happening to the character.
Right.
Like he picked up the paper cup. Well, instead of that, it's like he grasped the cardboard edges of the paper cup in the cool section of the case. You know what I mean? Like you're just
in
getting
detail.
Into it a little bit more,
it's more
so that we can feel it and believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Smells, tastes,
sensations,
sounds, more feelings, more understanding of the characters. And people are generally lazy and think, well, I've written my book. It's done. But honestly, the more you do it, the fun is in the editing. The mm-hmm. fun is in the layering of then taking this thing, chipping away at it.
And sometimes you'll make a change and that will affect the entire
the whole thing.
Book. So you might, you might really have to make some significant changes.
Yeah.
And I know that that's very intimidating, but that's the process.
Yeah. And you have to honor that.
So those passes, so there's a second draft and then how many drafts are there before you really can feel like
I'd say
I'm done?
Six.
Six of those.
At least six.
And you keep doing passes using the same, characters. Plot.
Yeah, and I think you'll start to realize where there's a big gaping hole. Usually it's plot or character, and you have to then go in and say, okay, this is cliched or this is boring or it's not dynamic enough or it's not realistic enough. And then really spend some time getting in there going, well, how can this be more realistic? What elements of this world am I not bringing to this novel?
Right.
And you'll know once you've been reading it for a while and, if you do, once you've through to maybe four drafts, you might want to show it to someone and get some feedback. And that's hard because you really have to get the right person to give you feedback because,
how do you find that? I mean, aside from you, who's really good.
Someone you
trust. Professional. Okay.
Someone you trust who you think has really good objective opinions about stuff. Like my husband's excellent. Mm-hmm. Like he'll give me comments that my agents then end up giving me.
Oh, right. Like, so why even like have an agent?
Yeah. I'll just give him the
10%. Just give him the 10%.
Yeah. But someone who's bringing up issues that are real rather mm-hmm. than someone who's just bringing up any issue to show off, to show off that they're creative and wonderful. You want someone who's not an egomaniac giving you notes.
So what's the fastest you've seen what's the fastest sort of time frame? So there's a 10 weeks to sort of get the bad novel out.
Mm-hmm.
And then where do you get to the, is there a time frame? Can it be as long as?
I think someone can do it in 6 months.
Okay.
But that's usually someone who's maybe already in the writing field, who's used to writing and possibly has more time than other people to write, like someone who's retired
mm-hmm.
or at home and has the luxury of 4 or 5 hours a day. But I think it's reasonable for someone to spend a year mm-hmm. on a book. and should be able to get out a pretty good draft that then will probably be reworked a lot through agents and editors. So, you know, even though you think it's done, then when you get it into the professional realm, it's going to be a whole other level of working it.
Editing it.
And that can be very hard because you're often over it by that stage.
Yeah. Is there any moment where you should just put it in your drawer and not look at it for a little while? Do you ever do that where you sort of say, okay, I did this final edit. Now I'm going to put it away for 3 months and then I'm going to revisit it when I'm sort of, when it's, my head is more clear.
I tend to think no. I think you're writing a story at this time for a reason. And I think if you put it away for a certain amount of months, you've given up on it.
And it stops your momentum.
Yeah, the momentum's gone. And also the reason why you wrote it often is gone. So let's say, because I believe there's like a subconscious reason you're writing a book mm-hmm. that you may not be aware of. So let's say the subconscious reason is you're struggling in your marriage about yeah. some element of your marriage. And the book could have nothing to do with that, you think. Like it could be about two dogs who go on an adventure through the woods together. And so if you then put it away for 3 months, maybe you solve that issue within your marriage.
Yep.
And when you come back to the book, you don't know why you wrote it. And you're not that interested in it anymore.
Right, it just wasn't in that moment.
And the passion's kind of gone for, because you're basically trying to solve a question within yourself by writing a book. And if you solve that question yourself too early, the need to write the book's gone. And I think that's dangerous. I think you need to stay with the book and just get it done. It's kind of like any job you have, you're working on a project at work. They're not going to want you to just put it aside for a few months and come back to it. You know, they just want you to get it done.
Just get it
done. You know, like have the deadlines, get it done. And I think by creating the deadlines and getting it done, you tell the universe you're serious about it and you get it done. You know, and the fact of the matter is sometimes it's just doing the work. It's not so much about emotionally and understanding the material you're doing. It's like sometimes you got to let go of that a little bit and just do the work and see what comes out without you being so controlling. But I think moving away from things is dangerous.
Well, this has been fantastic. This is like my favorite. Aww. No offense to my other guests, but I learned so much in this last hour. I can just keep you here for another hour. Thank you so much, Tempany, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I hope you'll come back when we talk about a million other things.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
That was super interesting, right? Really recommend her class if you happen to be in the LA area. All right. So next week, we have Dan Bova of Entrepreneur.com. The editorial director of Entrepreneur.com will be in this studio. Well, he actually won't be in the studio. He'll be in New York, but he'll sort of be in the studio and he'll be giving you advice on what Entrepreneur is looking for, his incredible career from being a magazine editor at Maxim magazine, Spy magazine, all the way through to Entrepreneur. I think you'll get a lot of valuable lessons from that. But until that time comes, remember, I'm Jonathan Small with Writing Partner Consulting, encouraging you always to do the right thing.